Welcome to the show. Today is a interesting show. God damn it. This kind of sums up the whole show, actually. I hit kind of a tough patch not too long ago, and it's been a life of tough patches. I don't want to come off like a whiner. That's probably why I was hesitant to even do this episode. But the episode's about depression, and it's something that I think exists in a lot of people. I know in my field with stand-ups and actors and any artist for that matter, it's pretty prevalent. But also in normal, everyday, 9-to-5 people, I don't know if it's the current climate or if it's the fact that we have so much that not being happy while having so much becomes something really hard to bear or to fathom. I have a buddy who he's a heavy set guy, and he has associated himself with losing because of the weight. And we've talked about this at length, where what if you lose the weight and everything stays the same? And I think that's, a big fear. And I think that's one of the reasons why, people who probably don't consider themselves prone to depression can get depressed. I know a lot of people politically are depressed. I know people emotionally and where they're at in their lives can get depressed that way. So there's a wide range of depression, and I'm no expert. I'm not claiming to be a guy that has a background in depression, or I'm a psychologist, or I have the credentials to give you advice. The only advice and the only reason why I feel that I have the experience to talk about this openly in public is because I've dealt with it for years. I'm talking about probably since I was 11 years old. So I think I am kind of cut from a mold that from the beginning didn't really believe in depression. I kind of come from people that call you a pussy whenever you're down and out. But if I took a really close look at some of my family members, I could see that depression is something they definitely carry with them and that they ignore. And I know that's definitely been the case for me for a long time. It really has led to many of my terrible decisions in life. It can all pretty much be stemmed back to the fact that I can have really low lows. So just to give you some context up front before I jump into this, the way I'm going to handle the episode, and forgive me, I did my best to organize it because I really want to be clear and I want to be poignant and I want to have a directive, but it's a pretty emotional topic, and there are some things that I have to check myself on because it just doesn't involve me. It's a public thing and I have family, and I would hate for them to feel involved in my story when it's my story. I don't know if that makes any sense, but hopefully throughout the course of the show for the next 45 minutes, I could explain it better. But my plan is to kind of take it, not necessarily decade by decade, but era by era. I'm 35, so the first time I felt any kind of depression or sadness let me classify this. So sadness, is you're supposed to feel sad. You're supposed to mourn things. You're supposed to have a balance of emotions, and that's the goal, right? You're going to have tough days, you're going to have great days, you're going to have okay days, you're going to but rolling with those punches and not letting things take you to a really deep, dark place, that's called being able to manage your emotions. And I that's the whole point of the episode, is I cannot. There is something in me that does not allow me to, when it gets really, really bad, for me to just brush it off and move forward. I'll jump in deep with that. So starting off in the 80s, towards the end of the 80s, I was probably about 8 or 9, 10 years old, about 8 or 9. And I remember being in third grade, and I remember, something happened. A girl not liking me that I had a crush on. All right, this is 9-year-old Josh, vintage 9-year-old Josh. Actually, it's vintage 35-year-old Josh. Yeah. Being obsessed with somebody that doesn't know they exist. I'm married now. You know what I mean, motherfuckers. Come on. It's all for the show. But really, up until like the last 10 years, that was me. So I remember being really obsessive in the sense that I would want to know why. I'd never talk to her. Never would I talk to her. I just literally wrote about her in we had a class journal. So like a third grade blog. And I remember being on the playground and seeing her talk to, say some random other boy in the class. And the next morning I would write in this fucking journal. And dumb me, I had the case of the millennials where I wanted everyone to know what I was writing and what I was saying and that my emotions were so important. So my teacher grades these journals. And I remember her kind of writing little notes to me like, you should get over her. Like, she was almost became my Dear Abby in a way, where I was writing these journals. And over the course of the school year, I remember it started to get more directed towards her on her advice. And I almost felt like for a minute, it was her soap opera between me and this girl. And I've never really even told the girl about what I was writing. I would just do the standard, you know, 8-year-old, 9-year-old thing where I would, you know, pick on her or say something to flirt, which was more insulting than anything else. But I remember not getting my way and it affecting me tremendously, probably way more than it should have affected me as an 8-year-old. And I try to think back, like, what is that? Why? Like, where does that stem from? Is that a genetic thing? Is that upbringing? And it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, you have to know where I come from, I guess, to know me, and you have to know where you come from to know yourself. So to try to make a little more sense out of the thing, my upbringing, my family and I, my parents had me really young. I was first of three, so we all lived in an apartment at first, or a little house, whatever the case may be, when I was born. And then as my parents, you know, my mom was 18, my dad was 21. And as times got a little tight and they kept having kids, they moved us all into my mother's house. Now, in this house, it was a very middle class. I don't know. So I don't know what the probably lower middle class, I would say. I mean, we weren't in the projects. We weren't poor. We weren't starving, but we were definitely really, really broke. And it wasn't just our family that lived there. So it ended up being all five of us in one room. And I remember, another couple, my uncle and his wife lived there. And then at one time, another family lived in another room that was created out of the garage. And that was actually, you know, when you're growing up, you don't know, like, that's a hard situation for the adults to be in, being in not having their own space. I mean, I've lived in New York City for 11 years and having roommates your whole life, your whole time here. I mean, it's been a bitch. It sucks. It sucks not to be able to walk around in your underwear. It sucks not to be able to, you know, bang somebody on the couch that you're hanging out with in the open. I mean, it all sucks. It all sucks to have to be courteous and considerate of the people around you. And it doesn't suck any less when it's your fucking family. So I remember growing up as a kid and loving the fact that we were all in this place together. We were all hanging out. I could see my cousins all the time. I mean, everyone was there. It was awesome. But it never hit me how hard it must have been on my parents. In the sense that, you know, there were times where they were less than stellar. And I'm sure partially that had something to do with it. And I think that's where I first kind of started to be really aware of my surroundings at a really young age. And when I say surroundings, I mean aware of my mother's feelings, my dad's feelings. Plus, they were really young parents. They were super open, probably beyond open, appropriately open. They would say things around me. And I remember worrying about money at 10. I remember, you know, having them say they didn't have money for this or that or the other thing. And I remember worrying about that, and that worry never really stopped. So I guess to start the conversation, 8-year-old kid completely consumed in adult life and literally worrying about bills being paid as I'm in school, worrying about how to make money or where we're going to live. Because there were times where, you know, my parents would talk about getting out of there and not being able to afford their own place, and I would overhear these things, or they would somehow, I would be involved in the conversation. Not necessarily they would ask me for advice. Obviously, that's ridiculous, but there was no hiding what was going on with them. It just wasn't possible for them. So I think that is kind of the first introduction to depression for me, because I think for me, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, what really is the catalyst of depression is being in on the joke of life. Now, that's a really pessimistic and brutal view about it, but that's the best way I can describe it to people who don't really experience depression very regularly. For me, it's being in on the joke of life. And what I mean by that is things are, if you look at things really hard and you break them down to their lowest common denominator without any of that Gary V, you got to be motivated, that Tony Robbins slapping your chest, and all that stuff, really, that applies. If you can, it's just like religion. If you can get on board with religion and have your faith, you know, faith will carry you through a lot of stuff. But if you're part atheist and then part spiritual, like I consider myself, it's a lot of confliction going on there. A lot of times when stuff's really, really hard, it's really tough to embody the faith, because, you know, if you get dealt a lot of bad hands, it's going to be really hard for you to have faith. It's really difficult for me to even say that, because I know there's a lot of people out there that have a lot worse than I do. But that doesn't change the fact that depression exists even within people that have everything. So, at 8 or 9, it really hit me that life is very hard. There was nothing about my parents' life that was easy. There was nothing. And in association, it made our lives very hard. So I think that's where depression truly came in to play in my life. It had a voice. Now it had a voice. The innocence was gone. I remember being highly sexual for some reason. I remember locating porno videos and watching them. And when you're 9... that's not okay. That's another adult thing. I mean, I might as well start drinking fucking Johnny Walker Black and smoking cigarettes at 9 at that point. I remember cursing a lot, like in my normal tongue, like my normal language, my normal interactions with other children. And it would, I would never understand why the other kids, you know, the kids that came from homes that probably didn't allow them to do that. And not that my parents allowed me to curse. I mean, my parents would beat the shit out of me, but they all cursed. So whenever they weren't around, I adopted a lot of the habits of being a foul-mouthed punk kid. And I remember being around, you know, there were a few times my school kind of had a mixed bag. There were kids like me who kind of came from lower income brackets, and other kids that came from even the lower income bracket that they bust in from the more poor neighborhoods. And then there were, like, sprinkled through us kids that lived in the surrounding area that, you know, we're probably middle class, upper middle class. And I remember those kids hearing me talk. And I remember distinctly this one time, this girl, this random girl my age in my class, we were doing, you know, I don't know about you, but in my elementary, you used to have to stand in a line in the morning. You would find your class number and you would stand in that line, and then your teacher would come out and get you and bring you all to class. Which I think that's a San Diego thing, because it's always nice, so you can get away with that shit. I mean, try that in fucking Minnesota and you'll kill a kid. So we're standing in this line, and I remember just saying something. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was like probably just something to the effect, this fucking this and this fucking that, and then that kid, this fucking asshole. And I remember this girl's face being absolutely mortified that I was speaking this way. And she told on me, and I had to stand in a corner and stare at a wall. And it hit me that I didn't understand why she was so upset. And it's something that has continued throughout the course of my life and career, is that I come from a background where you could walk into any home of my family for the most part and say pretty much any foul mouth, inappropriate thing you want. And if it's funny, they'll laugh. And if it's not, you'll just get ignored. There was no repercussions. There was no consequences for that. As a kid, yes, but as far as an adult, no. I mean, we've had a lot of dirtbags around that said whatever the fuck they want. So I never understood why people would ever be offended at anything. I still don't understand it. Actually, really hard for me. Not as hard as it used to be because I've been in therapy for 11 years, but it's hard to grasp the being offended. Now, I get there's variations, right? Like if you came and spat in my wife's face, I guess that would be classified as offending me, but I guess I would react where I would literally hit you in the head with a bat and kill you. I would hope to do that. And that's another part of the story too, where my reactions are always irrational. There is no initial reaction for me that's rational. I have a progression, and the rational solution for me is usually about five down. So I go down about three or four really awful things as far as reacting to things. I don't have a good reaction measure. It's gotten better. I mean, the fourth and fifth rational options didn't really exist up until about 2011. So I'm growing up in this household where pretty much anything goes, or I'm watching people where anything pretty much goes. And it's developing a sense of not only how adults operate and how they're supposed to operate and teaching me those habits, but also how you treat your partner, how you deal with sexuality, how you react to the world. I learned these things in a crash course. It wasn't like it was an evolution like a lot of, I read all these books now about how you're supposed to raise kids. I mean, it's unbelievable how much effort now goes into raising kids, which I don't completely agree with all the time either. Sometimes I do like some of the ways I was brought up with, but, I'm also fucked up. So anyways, back to the point. And you're supposed to, I guess, I don't know what the phrasing would be, but you're supposed to take a child and help them understand why, not just do this. It's understanding why, so you can develop a point of view and hopefully from there become a functional, responsible individual. I was more crash course. I remember seeing people do blow when I was a kid around me. I remember one time a buddy of mine brought these pages ripped out of a penthouse of naked women, and I said, "Where'd you get this?" And he's like, "Oh, this guy in the canyon gave it to me." And he was, and he kept pulling out his wiener and rubbing it. And I remember telling people that, and no one really flinched. They're like, "Hey, don't go in that canyon." Can you imagine this day and age of one of these fucking schools where they coddle the children and one of the kids saying they went into a canyon and saw a guy stroking himself and giving them porno, and the parents not fucking pulling out a Frankenstein lynch mob and finding this fucking guy? I mean, no way. I remember it being a very minimal blip on the fucking radar there that this dude was in this canyon. He was whacking himself. So I remember even being at my buddy like, "Hey, man, we got to get more of those penthouses. Where's this guy at? Let's go find our dealer." I mean, this is stuff that when you're a 10-year-old kid, you don't know. You don't know this guy's a child molester. You don't know that. You just think, "Oh, he's this cool guy with fucking nudie magazines." So it's a very confusing situation. And then from 10, you're trying to develop any kind of individuality, right? And in reality, you're not individual at all because you're literally liking everything that everyone else likes. I remember being in class and this other kid had a flat top like I did, and I wanted to have the best flat top. I went around the class and tried to lobby for everyone to tell him that my flat top was better than his. I mean, I have a problem. The problem is the fact that I need to feel like I am special, and I feel like that may be a problem for everybody, but it's a huge problem for me because I'm raised by an individual that told me all the time how special I was, and any time I wasn't good at something or I wasn't the best, she would say they were wrong and I should essentially quit, in so many words. So I grew up with this entitlement and really with no reason to have it. I was poor. I had really bad teeth. My genetics are okay. I'm not an ugly kid, but I was by no means the fucking male model of the class. I was pretty good at sports, which was that helped me, but I had this unhealthy view of myself that didn't allow failure to be an option, and not like I was such a hard worker that I would work so hard I wouldn't fail, but the minute something looked like it was going to fail, I would either try to find a way to cheat, manipulate, or just flat out move on to something else, and felt like I was wrong. I was wronged in some way. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because that is also a huge, you know, lightning rod in my depression and where it comes from. I don't think anyone can honestly discuss depression with a large group of people like I am now without bringing up what the catalysts are for the fact that, you know, you could lay around one day and not be able to get off the couch. You know, just to give people more of an insight on what happens when you're depressed. It's the feeling of hopelessness that really kills you. It's that feeling of you're never going to feel okay again. You're going to feel less than everyone, than everything, that you're a joke. I've lost jobs that I needed, not just entertainment jobs. I'm talking 9 to 5 or whatever, any job I had that helped me eat. I've lost them because of depression, where I can't get out of bed the next morning, or I'm late because I can't leave the house because I am petrified to leave the house. I mean, these are things that happen to me, used to happen to me frequently, not so much anymore before I got help. This is not a way to live. You know, this is reasons why people take themselves out, because you can't function. So I got into therapy. You know, I'm skipping a little ahead, but I'm going to go back. But just, you know, it is important to note this. I got in therapy about 11 years ago, and it's taken me up until now to grasp most of the concepts that were being put in front of me by my therapist. In the beginning, the part that hurt the most was getting through the first couple years and just getting to not even a normal place, just kind of understanding and feeling a little bit healthier. But as it, you know, I started to have those little mini breakthroughs. If you're in therapy, you know what those are. Basically moments of realizations where it's changing your perspective. That's what a breakthrough is. But it doesn't happen all at once where you figure it out, obviously. So I'd have these moments where I would still get the severe depression. And then worse, I was no longer delusional, so I could see what was in front of me. So imagine being able to still see the good in your life, but still feeling completely terrible. You know, the one thing about the depression before I got help was that everything looked like shit. Over the course of the last few years, everything looks the way it should look, but I still feel fucking terrible. And that is a taxing thing. That was probably the hardest part to get over, was that I was able to see the world the way it is in front of me. I was able to see the good things, the good people, the people that truly love me and care about me, and the relationships I've built. But it was impossible for me to feel better in that time frame. And usually, depending upon how bad it is, I haven't really had a bad spell in a while, but when it is bad, it probably lasts about 2 really hardcore weeks, and then I figure it out from there. And then if it's a minimal, it'll probably be, you know, maybe a day or two, and then I'll get with it. I've put some things in place that I've found to really help me. Working out does help balance me out. Fish oil, constantly taking fish oil, multivitamins, and a couple other concoctions help. Being on a routine help. Getting sleep helps. So that's another thing. I've had insomnia since I'm 11 years old. So some weeks I sleep fine and I'm able to go to bed at a regular time. And then other weeks, I'm up till 6 in the morning for no good reason. There's no reason. It's not like I had coffee or I took a nap or anything. It's my mind not letting me rest. That is always, when that happens, the next thing that happens is a severe, cycle that I go through. And I don't know about you, but imagine being 11 years old and not being able to fall asleep. You don't know why. You're a kid. You have no idea why. I remember being a kid and feeling weird going to sleep, hearing the sounds outside my room, whether it be my parents making love or the trees, or I remember being just really finicky and anxiety ridden and not knowing what my deal was at 11. So we end up moving to Las Vegas. My parents decided that, you know, we can't continue to live in my grandparents' house, all five of us in a room. So my father gets transferred to a gig in Vegas. We all go out there thinking, you know, my parents pitching it to us like it's the new booming place to be. And probably one of the worst experiences ever. If there ever was 2 years of my life that I can point out that truly are connected to everything awful in me, I could point to those 2 years. I shit on Vegas because of that. I don't know. I mean, I know some people from Vegas that really like it. So I'm from San Diego, California. I'm from a place where it's, you know, 72 degrees every day. All my family's there. I am half Hawaiian and half Sicilian. I have huge ties to my family. Obviously, at the beginning of this episode, I told you that I live with them in a house, almost like a compound. So obviously, I'm very close to them. I played sports in San Diego. I knew the streets. I had a best friend. And for me, I really only roll in one-person clique, if you will. Like, me having one good friend is pretty substantial for me. I've never been a guy that rolls in packs. It's part of, you know, if you've listened to the episode, you know why. A lot of fucking issues. And one of those issues is I don't really adapt to others. So there we go. So they moved me out of my school I'm in. I've gone to school with all the people that I was with for years. So as a kid, you know, I'm stabilized. I know everybody. I know where things are. I know the lay of the land. And I think I'm making a point to say that because that is really important. And I guess I didn't understand that because I was a kid. But now as an adult, I understand why the shakeup hurt so bad to leave. Was because I was a kid that did not adapt very well to begin with. And it took me, I know fifth grade, you're in school, what, 6 years? I started kindergarten there. So it took me 6 years to feel comfortable in that setting. I went to, you know, like I knew everybody. And they move you. And in Vegas, Vegas had just hit 1 million people when we lived there. My aunt and uncle lived there. So it kind of gave my dad the idea that it could work. My parents find a nice place. Everything looks good, and about 8 months into it, they separate. Potential divorce. Dad leaves. He starts going out to do his thing. Mom says, "Fuck. Well, if you know your dad's gonna go out and do his thing, I should be able to go out and do my thing." I was 12. My brother and sister were very young. They were sent back to San Diego to live, and I stayed in Vegas with my mother because I was old enough to be home alone, according to her. So, I started to kind of hang out with a bunch of guys who were kind of fuck-ups. I was having a hard time making friends, and they happened to live on my block. I remember they were kind of the bullies of the block. We would get off the bus, and they would throw rocks at me, and I would run home because I was scared to stand up for myself. That caused a lot of depression. I remember sitting alone in my room and crying, wondering why people would be, you know, would throw rocks at me. And I'm no saint. I mean, I was a bad kid. I probably made fun of a lot of people myself. But I don't recall ever, you know, throwing rocks at anybody, like, you know, concrete from the concrete slabs that you make walls out of. There would be those concrete blocks, like little chips of it would fall off. I mean, it's like fucking, you hit somebody in the head, it's over. And I remember thinking, like, why would anybody do that to anybody else? And then, of course, you know, 2 months later, those guys are my friends. And I remember being home alone quite a bit, not being very fun to be by yourself that much when you're a kid. And I kind of adapted to it. And to this day, I like sitting in a room alone. I just, it's something that I enjoy. And it's not healthy. It probably is what's the worst part of my depression that extends it is that I will sit in a room alone for days if I can. And I won't go outside the house. It's my move. So I have to literally force myself to leave the house. So I remember ditching school quite often because in Vegas at the time, they didn't call your house. So I would do this thing where I would act like I was going to the bus stop. And this, and my friends, even, you know, my friends that were the bullies and the bad kids, they went to school every day. They went to school every day. I didn't. They would always go like, how is your mom let you stay home from school? And I, and this is how. I would wait for, I would go like I was going to the bus stop. She was getting ready for work. She left 30 minutes after me. I would go in the shed and I would look and make sure she was gone. And I would go back in the house and I would just listen to Dr. Dre, The Chronic, over and over and over again. And I probably missed easily 20 days of school in the first 3 or 4 months of school. So in the middle of that, my mother meets a couple men. She's being courted by a few men. And then one strikes her fancy. And she, you know, says, okay, well, we're going to move in with this guy. But he wants to live out in this other part of Vegas that is now removed from the school I was at. So I was in school with these guys that I got to know, even though they were shitheads. At least I had a couple friends, and they like sports too. But now we got to move again, and now it's going to be with this strange man that I've barely met. Nice enough guy, I guess, but now I'm living with this dude. My dad, I see him every now and again. He's working a lot and doing his own thing. So my brothers and sisters now move back from California because they were there in California to live with my grandparents so my mom could get together. Now she's found a man, so now we are in this place. They come back, and then for a year we're at this place, and it's the same thing but even worse because now I don't connect with anybody. No one really wants to be my friend. I got kind of terrible fashion sense. I don't have much money, so I'm wearing jeans that are too small for me. I got terrible teeth, a terrible hairdo. I remember thinking about, like, how do kids know what to wear? Like, they all looked cool, and I looked like straight shit, like holes on my shoes. Like, it just – it was an awful scenario. And I remember one girl called me fish eyes. I don't know why that hurt my feelings then, because it's one of the worst insults I've ever heard anyone give. It was just bad, not original at all. I remember she was this black girl, and I came into class, and I was a new kid. And the teacher goes, okay, you can sit here in front of, like, let's call her Marianne or whatever her name was. And she goes – man, how come you gotta put some guy with fish eyes in front of me? I remember being like, bitch, first of all, she had the buckshots. I don't know if you ever watched Martin where the hair gets nappy and it's like a buckshot. And she had terrible breath and lips and they were chapped. And I remember that being the first moment of like, so you're saying that I felt so terrible about myself. I refrain from making fun of people because I was so good at picking myself apart due to the way I'm raised. I mean, my family, we rip on each other constantly, and it's considered loving. So, but we go hard. We destroy each other, like to the point where a normal person would cry. We think that's funny. So I remember being really conscious of all my flaws so I could create comebacks when me and my family were ripping on each other. I wanted to know all about how my teeth were fucked up so I could at least have a rebuttal. This girl was terrible looking, terrible hygiene, terrible sense of style. She probably was just as broke as me, but had the audacity to rip on me. And I remember being really taken back, like, what? How is this possible? You're not even trying to look good, and you're ripping on me. And I think that was my first comedic moment where I realized that I know I can destroy someone with words. I didn't have the balls to do it then because I was super timid as a kid and as a teenager. Just really timid. I think it's because I used to get my ass whipped at home all the time. It just made me really timid. I think talking back to adults or even to other kids, because in my house that wasn't allowed, I just did not bring that to the table. I just was a really timid, timid kid. And I was a mama's boy on top of that, so it was just a real, it's really weak, getting kicked in the rib situation every day. So finally we leave Vegas. My parents decide they're going to try to make it work back in San Diego. And now I have to switch schools again. I start ninth grade in one place, and then I decide to move to another school. So now In a matter of 3 years, I've probably been to five, six schools. So no stability, really no friends, no foundation, no community, and that really fucked with me. So the last school I ended up going to, in the beginning, I don't know anyone, and I think that pubescent state is hit me in the face at that point, right? Literally and figuratively, I had zits. I remember jacking off constantly. It was just a life of jacking off. It was just like I could not stop jacking off. And even now, I still do a lot. But then it was ridiculous. I know that's a teenage boy thing, but it consumed me. And the part that consumed me was not just the jacking off. It was the fact that it was like in love jacking off. There was this girl in my class. My buddy ended up marrying her, actually. It's really funny. She had these amazing boobs. She was mixed. She was half black, half white. And I remember every now and again we had two classes together, and I would stare at her, and I thought that I was being I thought I was being discreet. I wasn't being discreet. I was literally looking at. I could burn a hole through her top. I was looking at her so hard, and it wasn't. I wasn't a perverse kid necessarily then. I was a sweet kid. So yeah, I was looking at her and like I want to. My dick is hard, but my dick was hard because I was in love. Like I really felt for this woman. I had those illusions of grandeur in my head where we're together, we're boyfriend, girlfriend, we end up getting married. I mean, these are things that in my heart of hearts, this is what I am, right? I wanted to find someone I wanted to find stability, right? So I saw this girl and I picked her. She had no idea I picked her. I never talked to her. And I was staring at her a lot. And I remember, she would wear, she, we're all broke, so we all had three outfits, and one of our outfits was this button-up shirt, and one of the buttons would always be undone, and you could see like her bra and cleavage, and I would go home and run into my bathroom, and I would go to town because that was like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, put it all together: new kid, weird looking, terrible teeth, terrible hair, terrible skin, terrible fashion sense, terrible upbringing. And now you're in a school of a bunch of dudes who are from the ghetto, alpha males, ranging from the ages of 15, some of them 19 because they were in jail. And now you got to deal with that, you know? So, all right. So I am in this situation where I'm trying to establish myself in the school or attempt to have friends. Well, I knew one guy from back in elementary school. He had become a goth kid, and it was a failure. I did try to fit in, it just wouldn't happen. So I started to eat lunch alone in the dugout of the baseball field because at the time they still allowed off-campus lunch. I don't know if high schools do that. I know at the time ours eliminated that the next year, but because of off-campus lunch, I would get my lunch and I would go to this dugout. I didn't have to stay in the quad. I went to the dugout and I would eat by myself. Now, this is self-inflicted, obviously. I probably could have tried a little harder, but honestly, it was not in me to do that. I just didn't understand how to make room for myself in groups. Still don't to this day. Anyways. So after about 3 months of that, it got to be really hard for me to go to school and to go on. And I would be able, my dad was in the mix. My dad doesn't go for that shit. He wouldn't, he ain't gonna let me stay home. My mom is a little easier. My mom would let me stay home a lot. My dad does not let that fly. So I would have to go to school. I was getting terrible, terrible grades. I joined a public speaking class, or I was forced to take one. I guess that's an elective they forced to take. They force people to take. In this public speaking class, there was seniors in it, and a lot of pretty girls that were seniors because they were all like these college bound. It was probably the 10 people in the school that actually were going to go to college off of educational scholarships as opposed to sports ones. So it was like this class of intellectuals, and then the kid who is petrified to speak. I remember one time I went in front of the class and I had to give a speech, and my legs were shaking, and I remember the people in the front row laughing at me. It's fitting now, motherfuckers, huh? Look at me now. Get at me. Anyways, because I'm a professional public speaker, if you didn't understand what that rant was just about, I'm a professional public fucking speaker. People pay to hear me public speak. Sorry, ass motherfuckers. All right, so there is the final was due for the semester in this public speaking class, okay? And I had to give this big speech. It was actually the JFK inauguration speech or whatever. You know, ask not what you do if you all contrary, that whole thing. So I don't want to give this speech. I'm terrified. People are going to make fun of me. I'm not showing up. They assigned me in the class a attractive senior girl who kind of took me on as her little fucking pet dipshit project. And I didn't want to do it. I knew she was a nice girl, but I knew she was kind of patronizing me, like, oh, whoa, kind of pitying me, which I didn't feel very good. It wasn't her fault. I mean, I should have been pitied. I was awful. So I decided that I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go to school anymore. And I decided I didn't want to live anymore. Now, these are all things that kind of it wasn't really a progression. I think the latter came into play first, and the other ones kind of jumbled their way around, but I decided that's what I'm going to do. It's done. But how does a 15-year-old kid kill himself? You know, I know a lot of them figure it out, but I don't think I really wanted to do it. I think I just wanted to not have to go to school anymore or deal with that anymore, deal with me anymore, my life. So I took a whole bottle, it's probably half a bottle of aspirin, whatever was left. And I remember kind of passing out on the bathroom floor. And that day I didn't go to school. And my dad came in from work. And he was really angry at me. And when he kind of pushed the door open to the bathroom, it woke me up. So I was able to kind of get up and make it look like I was just in the bathroom. Not that I was passed out trying to do myself in on the floor. And he gave me a ration of shit. I got really sick, so I ended up staying home 2 days. Ended up doing that speech the next week. And I would love to say that all else was great for the rest of my life, but it wasn't. I ended up figuring it out, which, you know, most of us do. You know, most of us that have this do. You figure it out if you're, you know, unless you have it really bad and you definitely have an imbalance. You know, you don't figure it out, and unfortunately, usually those people end up doing harm to themselves, which is terrible. But I ended up kind of figuring it out, understanding some things, making some friends. Sports saved me. I ended up playing football in college. That saved me, allowed me to not feel like such an outsider. But still carrying around all this shit for years. Until I moved to New York and I found my therapist. And stuff is still hard now. It's a lot better, a lot better. I'm really fortunate. I'm really lucky, but it is hard. And that's why I wanted to do this episode. I've never done a solo episode. It's not something I like to do. I think it's kind of boring for me to just talk. I'm great at talking, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm very confident in that. But I like having a subject, right? But because I had some personal stuff happen to me and it sent me into kind of a tailspin, I thought it was really important to talk out loud about this. I thought it was really important to have this, you know, on record. Because you don't know who's going to hear it. It could be a kid, you know, 14 years old who doesn't have any friends. And he, you know, he feels the same way. And maybe he goes, all right, this idiot found out how to do it. If this idiot can do it, then I can do it. I think the biggest part is what my depression has done to others. And there's a lot of people in my life that I'm really lucky to have. And the people really close to me that know me, they've been directly affected by my depression, because I'll make foolish decisions, and I've made these decisions that they don't just affect me, they affect them. You know, I put them through stuff, and I think that's the hardest thing is when you're trying to clean up your act. You know, it's like coming out of it's like when you wake up after being really drunk and you're remembering all the dumb stuff you did the night before. Imagine years of that, you know, and therapy kind of wakes you up, and now you're in this hangover where you, I literally am thinking of things that'll pop into my head, you know, 10 years ago, and having to send a text to apologize to somebody because it was awful. I did something awful to them. And you know, just for clarity, people have been really bad to me. I haven't had a good life. That's no excuse though. And I wanted to say that because I think there's a lot of people out there. I mean, I know I talk to a lot of people who with depression. It's something that kids and teenagers and people, they've talked to me about depression. I've sat down with them and had conversations because I want to help and I want to be there and I want to be a support system. The first problem a lot of them have is they've been through some terrible stuff, whether it is sexual abuse, physical abuse. They've been through some terrible, terrible things, and they've had a terrible hand dealt to them. And they sometimes justify bad behavior by the fact that the world has literally thrown them away in their eyes. And I think for me, for a long time, I let myself get away with a lot because I felt that I was owed me doing bad things, which is it's ridiculous. It's fucking stupid. But when you're not well, these are the things that go through your head. So that to me is one of the hardest parts of the depression, is that you really do fuck with other people. And you don't really mean to, because you think you're so self-absorbed, you're so consumed with your bullshit, that you forget there are people around you, even in the very smallest way. You know, you're at your job depressed, and now someone else is dealing with you that doesn't even know you, some coworker, and you're fucking with their day. Some guy on the train that bumps into you, you want to fight him now because you feel like he's slighting you. You're fucking with his day. I mean, there's a lot of shit you do that indirectly and directly negatively affects the people in front of you. And you got a wife, now you're depressed, you fucking don't want to come out of the bed, you cancel date night. There's all these little things and big things you do that put people through shit that love you. It sucks. So if you're dealing with depression and it's something that you honestly know or think you have, you need to go sit down with somebody and talk to them. Don't just rely on the medication. I'm not currently on any medication. In the past, I've thought about it. I once was prescribed something for bipolar disorder, but that's a totally misdiagnosed situation. I'm not bipolar, I don't think. I have manic situations, and I definitely may have some slight tendencies that go towards that, but I'm not on any medication, and I know some people truly, truly need that, which is great. But if you're not talking to somebody, if you're not going out and seeing someone and sitting down and going through the exercises to try to deal with your shit on your own, and you're just taking the medication, you're in trouble. So, all right. I don't know if that was funny, but I hope it was somewhat helpful, and I appreciate all of you listening. And you can always email the show, brokentaileddog@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at brokentailed, BROKENTAILED. You can follow me at Josh Accardo on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. You can email me at the show. And I hope you guys are well. Hope you guys are healthy, mentally and physically. Lots of love.